I know, so much to talk about. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. It is Friday morning, and life is coming at us fast. So let me get right into this. If it weren't tragic, I would be bemused by what I have read this week from so many people, many of whom I trusted and respected once upon a time. This reaction to Trump's press conference in Helsinki is absolutely patently ridiculous and overblown. Yeah, I know. George Will, the latest here, coming out against Trump, saying that Trump colluded with Russia. There still is no proof of this seminal event. In order for any of this all to be relevant, right, the critical piece is Trump-Russia collusion. And it didn't, well, I don't know if it happened or not, but we still have not seen any objective proof that it did. The only thing we know is that, what, a handful of Trump insiders at some point met with the Russian ambassador. They met with some Russian gal who promised dirt on Hillary when she showed up at the meeting. It turned out all she wanted was a favor from the incoming president. She wanted Trump to help with some sanctions. And as soon as they realized that she didn't have anything, they kicked her out of the office. Meeting lasts all of, 25 to 30 minutes. There's so much nothing here. And it has continuously been made. It's developed a life of its own. I'm going to tell you why. There are two things that matter here. And the first thing is that the political establishment, the left in particular, the Democratic Party, these groups of people that have become loosely affiliated on this Trump collusion issue, all must find an explanation for why they missed the mark, why they failed, why an outsider stole their lunch. You've got to understand, if your entire life, if you are a politico, even a conservative politico, if you're a Bill Kristol or a George Will or any of these never Trumpers who have suspended all logic and all reason to come out with these ridiculous opinion pieces. Look, they totally missed the boat. Everything they had, they invested in a fight against Trump, and they lost. All of these people went on record ad nauseum telling us how Trump would never be president. Trump would never make it past 2% in the primaries. The late Krauthammer, right? Remember when Krauthammer went on after the first debate or second debate, whatever it was, and said, "You have just witnessed the implosion of the Trump candidacy." At every point in turn, they were wrong. And these are brilliant people. If your entire life was to have a pulse on the political happenings of the country and you were this far off the mark, trust me, you would be doing some soul searching. You would be doing some self-examination. The only problem is these people, all of them, whether it's the conservatives, the National Review crowd, or whether it's the Democratic Party, people within the DNC power structure, or the mainstream media, whatnot, all these people have tremendously large ego, right? This is the ego here is preventing anybody from saying, you know what? Maybe we blew it. Maybe the reason we lost is that the hope and change, forget Hillary, take all that out of it. We ran hope and change. We tried it for 8 years, and all we got was political establishment status quo from a country that demanded a new beginning. You had Obama talking the talk, but when it came to walking the walk, what did we have? An endless spectacle of bite of bloated Democrat, all these Democratic Party operatives, these Do you remember all the spending scandals that the Obama years had? So here we are as Americans, where everybody was tightening their belts with a crap economy because we constantly had a president talking the economy down and crapping on anyone who wanted to start a business or be slightly entrepreneurial. Meanwhile, these government hacks are spending millions of dollars on Las Vegas conferences. You remember all this? $45 a head breakfasts to exchange ideas. Junkets, commemorative coins, all this nonsense, spending millions, hundreds of millions, if not billions of our tax dollars on nonsense. And none of that was challenged. None of that changed. The change that people wanted was a rebalance of power between the people and the government. That is the change that people wanted. Hillary lost because there was in no way any likelihood that she was going to deliver on that kind of change. It didn't matter what she said. It didn't matter what she did. It didn't matter how much she campaigned or how little she campaigned. Her ideas, and more importantly, what she stood for, was more of the same. And it's exactly that nobody wanted. And with all these political pontificators, getting to point two here, all these political pontificators missed is that perhaps in order for the change to come about that the people so badly want, they themselves have to be wiped from the map. Because you get all these people, look, in Bill Kristol, you know who Bill Kristol is, right? He's the Weekly Standard editor. And I would say he's the dean of the conservative, so-called conservative anti-Trump movement. He's their nominal head. He's the Pope of the Trump haters on the right. Well, Bill Kristol, in his fantasy land, okay, and this is a brilliant guy, but in his fantasy world, everybody gets wiped from the map, but him. He becomes the guy the president calls and, tell me, Bill, what do I do? What do we do here? How do we build the country? And based on his erudite understanding of philosophy and politics and economics, the world is reordered according to him. And Trump rendered all of these idealists, all of these thinkers, all of these intellectuals, he just wiped them. He wiped the floor with them. And each of them in the primaries got behind their pet candidate, whether it was Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush. And there were loser candidates. I mean, they were losers. And they lost. And here's the most important thing. They lost fair and square. You want to know what's American? Traditional notions of fair play. And the only person in 2016 who abandoned those traditional notions of fair play, who pissed on them on a regular basis, was Hillary Rodham Clinton. She and her husband took massive amounts of bribe money from anybody from the Sultan of Brunei to Putin himself through various Russian emirs. I mean, billions of dollars in the aggregate for their ridiculous sham of a foundation supposedly doing good work around the world. It was a way to collect legal bribes. Most corrupt person conspiring with the Democratic Party to rig an election, to rob Bernie Sanders of the nomination, to subvert the will of the American people. And all the Democrats can do right now is talk about how Trump colluded with Russia. It is patently absurd. I'll tell you what I know. For certain, Russia interfered. It's what they do. The Russians do this not only here in the United States, they do it in Europe all the time. I'm up close and personal, familiar with it in the Czech Republic. They do this. All the Eastern European countries, Western European countries, they're very involved. I know what else I know. We do the same thing. Do you know how many millions, tens of millions of dollars were spent by the Obama administration to actually try to unseat Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel? Do you remember this? Yeah, you probably don't, because the mainstream media didn't talk about it. Where's the outrage? Is what we do. And arguably there it was a political vendetta. We get involved around the world. The Russians get involved. Israel's Mossad gets involved. I mean, but the absurdity here is that we have somehow taken something that is an accepted, normal part of countries spying on each other, of countries interfering with each other, and we've turned it into a political football because the opposition in this country cannot get over 2016, and they must continue to build a fantasy fairy tale to explain why they were wrong. The word is denial. And it's not healthy. It's not normal. It's bizarre. But don't be fooled by a so-called bipartisan chorus of voices. People on the right, people on the left, Democrats, Republicans, all joining in a joint condemnation of Trump's comments in Helsinki. Treasonous comments. Bowing down to Putin. Do you know why he... You know what Trump said that was so treasonous? He questioned our illustrious intel community. He dared to distrust the intel generated by the CIA run by John Brennan. I'll discuss more of that later. Yeah, Brennan. The same Brennan who, let's just repeat, go back a little bit here. John Brennan is an Obama appointee. He leads the CIA. He's a former communist. He voted for the Communist Party in the 70s. He's a total leftist hack. He's a close confidant of President Obama. Trump makes the critical mistake of keeping him on after he becomes president. But at any rate, in the year during the election, it is Brennan using the CIA illegally, might I add, to spy on Trump as his campaign began to heat up. Now, he couldn't turn that information over just to lawmakers directly. So what he did is he called his buddy over there, Comey at the FBI, and began feeding him information that they obtained supposedly. And we know now that they were using all sorts of informants that were total just nutters and people they were paying tens of thousands of dollars to fabricate stories, the infamous Golden Showers dossier, et cetera, et cetera. And then at a critical point, in order to get Congress involved, who does he go to? Does he go to, let's say, a panel of lawmakers who handle intelligence matters like the House Select Intelligence Committee? No. He goes to Harry Reid, the biggest Democratic Party hack on the Hill, then Senate Majority Leader, and says, hey, look what I got. Help me. Help me. And that is the birth of this entire story. Well, the whole narrative dealing with Trump-Russia. It was cooked up. And you know what else was cooked up? The Mueller indictment against those 12 Russians comes out on the 13th. And Trump's press conference and summit with Putin is scheduled for when? For the 18th? You think for a minute that that's coincidental? You think for a minute that Mueller didn't specifically send this indictment out beforehand to trip Trump up, to trip him up, to get him? When it comes to the way the Mueller probe is working, I don't see any. There are no, absolutely no coincidences that can be overlooked. This whole thing is nothing. And when you listen to these, you see, because you're getting inundated. You're getting inundated by story after story, person after person, saying ridiculous things like this. Quote from TheHill.com opinion piece, Brent Budowski, opinion contributor. Quote, history will be kind to the long and growing lists of conservatives, Republicans, and former Republicans who have had the courage and clarity to aggressively confront the attack against America by Russian dictator Putin and President Trump, who is ominously uninterested in confronting Putin's attack against American and European democracy. This is what you've been hearing. And I'm telling you, Brent couldn't be any more wrong if he tried. History is going to be unkind to this mass shrill hysteria of losers, of poor losers who lost an election and cannot come to terms with it. Oh, and incidentally, by the way, let me tell you some of the ways, the words versus actions. This is really important. So what's actually being done? What has the Trump administration actually done practically to help Putin, if they're so close and such great buddies, since he's become president? That, I think, is far more telling. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
So how many lawyers does Mueller have? I mean, he's got a staff of, 30, 40 lawyers, all top people. What else? What else do we have? We've got virtually an unlimited black budget, investigators. He's got a hostile, deep state to Trump, all of whom are very willing and ready to help Mueller hang him, right? Hang Trump and get Trump. And so now, with the Mueller investigation turning the clock of a year, right? It's been going on for a year. And still, what do we have? Got 12 Russians who are working for their intelligence unit who are hacking into emails. If it's true, by the way, if it is even true, so what? It's happening. But where's the collusion? There still has been no direct line drawn to Trump or anybody in Trump's inside circle. Now, the other thing I want to point out here is Trump supposedly is treasonous for doubting publicly in a press conference with Putin his own intel community, right? A lot has been made of that. So what did he say? He got up there and he says, well, you know, Mr. Putin's been, President Putin's been very persuasive. And, we don't really know what happened. And the outcry over this, right? The outcry. Oh, my gosh, how could he possibly do this? So I have a posit for it. Do you remember Obama and his 2009 Cairo speech? In that speech, Obama figuratively took a dump on everything that is America. He did. I mean, he didn't just crap on, our intelligence community. I mean, he didn't, Obama went to foreign soil. He did this over and over again to apologize for who we are as a country, to take to a country that still throws gay people off of rooftops, persecutes minorities, burns down Christian churches, a country like that, to tell them that America is not the great country that she is. All of these hysterical voices in the media were silent. None of these people, I don't even know if these conservatives spoke up in such strong terms as they are right now against Trump, for so many pronouncements of that type that Obama made during his 8 years in office. And that's how I know that this is all BS. That is all I need to know. Because to me, I've always been able to differentiate between this great country and who we are as a nation and our government. The left can't do this. This is why during the Vietnam War, when the left fought the establishment, they burned the American flag. They burned symbols of our country, not symbols of our government or of our military. They didn't protest just the president or just Congress and people that were made. They spat on our soldiers. They went to foreign soil. They went to the Soviet Union at the time. And people like Jane Fonda traveled to Hanoi and posed on the enemy's weaponry, praising the enemy. This is a history that the left owns. And the great tell in all of this, the great interesting thing I think the history books will show when we're talking about history, as this columnist did, I just mentioned earlier, the thing that we're going to see is, look, the left, when Obama was in office, we conservatives in the opposition, we loved this country and we wanted to save this country from Obama. We wanted to save this country from leftist policies. We want to save this country from socialized medicine. We want to save this country from Bill Ayers, basically being a guest of honor at the White House. And we wanted to save the country from that. But we loved this country. We loved her so dearly. And now you have the left and they are out there. They're burning flags. They're cloaking it all in this. Oh, it's treason. It's treason. It's treason. Suddenly, Democratic Party, the left, has figured out what the word treason means. I think about, 40 or 50 years too late. All right. We're doing a legal segment up next, as per usual. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski here. Got my attorney hat on. Oh, this is good. This is so good. You know the Janus decision. This is the Supreme Court case recently handed down, which prohibits the automatic withdrawal, confiscation, of a portion of employees' paychecks, even if they are opting out of the union by the union, right? So the unions have always been, all of their power has come from being able to, if they're a union shop, even if you're not in the union, they're still grabbing money out of your check, right? They're taking a little portion out of it. And I've always railed against this. I think this has just been abysmal because let's say you're a conservative and now you've got a union and they're giving money to the Democratic Party and they're giving money to, I don't know, Planned Parenthood and everybody under the sun. And that's your money going to them, right? Bad enough that the government's taking so much out. Now, also the union. So Supreme Court has come down and said, enough, you're done. It raises an interesting question, though. Can now you or I, if we've worked in such an environment where a union has been taking money out of our paychecks, can we get our money back? Can we get our money back retroactively? And the answer is maybe yes. And I will explain. When a case goes up to federal court, not just federal court, but up through to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court makes a decision on a certain aspect of federal law, that decision is considered to be law as it always has been. In other words, even though in the Constitution, the lawmakers are Congress, for example, are prohibited from creating retroactive laws, right? When a case goes up to the Supreme Court and a decision is made, that law, we basically act as if that law had always stood as is. Now, that means that it is unconstitutional for unions to take money out of your check, and it's unconstitutional today the same way as it would have been back in 2015 or 2012 or 2008. I'm going to tell you something. this case, this is so important because this could be, these type of lawsuits could end unions as we know them. Well, why? Well, because can you imagine suddenly being hit up for back dues? I mean, unions' influence are already waning. They're already on the skids, but obviously, assuming, let's say, a budget, you know, any company, right? If you suddenly have to disgorge years and years and years, decades of past revenues for any business, and unions are a big business, it's catastrophic. You've already spent the money. You can't claw that money back from, you know, you can't call up Chuck Schumer and say, yo, Chuck, we're going to need some of that. We're going to need some of those donations back. Yeah, you can't call the Vegas casinos and say, hey, send us our money back. You can't do that. So this could actually mean the elimination of a number of unions. It's insane. And the left is going to fight this. And what I predict will happen is the lower courts, the district courts where these lawsuits are going to take place. And district courts are the trial courts in the federal system. It's where cases generally like this are heard right at the get-go. A lot of those courts, as we know, are staffed by very, very left-wing judges. And so what the unions are going to do, they're going to do something called forum shopping, where you find the right judge. You find the right court. You file in that jurisdiction where you're likely to get a favorable outcome. And what they're going to do, even if they have no hope of succeeding ultimately with the Supreme Court, if it even gets that far, they're going to try to prevent and slow this down and wait out the enemy. But I'm telling you, the vultures are circling. What I hear from my friends in the industry is that there are people are signing clients up. They're going to turn these things into class action lawsuits, bring in a number of plaintiffs and take down the unions. And I love it because for too long, these unions have been operating so shamelessly as a backup arm of the Democratic Party and the left wing establishment in this country. And it's time to reverse the tide. Change is in the air. And this was an absolutely correct decision in the Supreme Court. And another reminder why, for all of our shrill hyperbole regarding Trump and his love fest with Putin, that, you know, we got some business to be getting to. Brett Kavanaugh? Anyone? Anyone? Yeah, we haven't been talking about that. All we're talking about is Trump, Putin. And maybe that's by design. Think about that. All right, Sam Rogowski back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski here on MSNBC Morning Joe on Tuesday, the day after the Helsinki summit. Former CIA Director John Brennan is talking about or is characterizing Trump's comments as treasonous. Now, here's the actual clip. I need you to hear this because there's no exaggeration of mine in describing his comments as totally outrageous. Listen closely.
What Mr. Trump did yesterday was to betray the women and men of the FBI, the CIA, NSA, and others, and to betray the American public. And that's why I use the term that this is nothing short of treasonous, because it is a betrayal of the nation. He is giving aid and comfort to the enemy, and it needs to stop. And Mr. Trump needs to understand that there are going to be consequences for him, too.
So just so you realize, he's not using the colloquial term treason. He's not using it that way. He's actually defining it legally, which is giving aid and comfort to the enemy. Look, this is a guy, right? He, as head of the CIA, politicized the CIA like virtually no other director before him and weaponized the CIA in a political contest. And he did it to ingratiate himself to Hillary Clinton. He did it because he's a political ideologue. But he violated his oath. He violated his oath as the head of the CIA. And if I were Brennan, I would run and hide and shut up. I'm telling you, he is in a fight for his life, because if Trump is not mortally wounded by these guys, and I strongly believe he's not, I strongly believe that there is no smoke, no fire, just hype. Trump is going, sooner or later, these are the guys that are going to end up getting burned. It's already taken down a number of bozos at the FBI. It's already blown up in their face. You know, they started this thing with Trump, and who's the one that's getting burned? Okay? It's not Trump. Now, Rand Paul really nails it here, talking to Tucker Carlson on Wednesday. Listen to this exchange.
It makes me wonder whether he should be getting a government pension if he's going to be disrespecting the commander-in-chief, calling the president treasonous. That's about as overtop as you can imagine.
But treason is a death penalty offense. He's describing views he disagrees with.
Well, yeah.
Is disagreeing with someone's opinion the same as betraying the country?
Well, you have to realize John Brennan started his illustrious career by voting for the Communist Party. You know, that's who he wanted to win the presidency back in the 70s, so he voted for the Communist Party. When he came to be head of the CIA, I filibustered him because I thought he was bad news from the very beginning. And I think what you've seen is, and what should worry us all is, this is one of the most powerful people in the world. Who has the ability to destroy anybody in the world and gain information on anything you do, any American, any foreigner? The head of the CIA. And yet, with all that power, he was coming to work each day with a bias and a hatred of the president. It should worry us all.
Bingo! Reverse the roles! Reverse the roles. If this had been Obama in the White House, and some closeted, you know, deep state Republican conservative alt-right freak who wanted nothing but Obama to be destroyed. I mean, crap, that would have taken all of, what, 20 minutes between him and Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Family Foundation and all that nonsense. But make no mistake, first of all, I laughed out loud when I saw this because, you know, Tucker Carlson goes, wait, treason's a death penalty offense. And I'm laughing. I'm like, well, Brennan's a communist. Brennan's a communist. He's a freaking commie pinko. This is treasonous, death penalty offense. This is just for something that he has a disagreement with Trump over. This isn't a death penalty. Of course, it's for the left, for the communists, if they disagree with you, it's the death penalty. Firing squad, buddy. This is a guy who gets a hard-on, pardon my language, for Stalinistic pure purges. And all of a sudden, I mean, Putin and Russia are the enemies of the West. This Putin is a continuation of the Soviet regime. In all but nominal form. And these guys, the Democrats, these left-wing Ivy League school nonsense people, they have been having wet dreams about the Soviet Union since the beginning of time. And all of a sudden now we are to believe this phony outrage over collusion and da-da-da-da-da. Remember and never forget this, that when pressed about Russian hacking, Russian interference, President Obama, who presumably was getting a briefing from Brennan in his morning intel report every day, said, no, there's no hacking, there's no interference. And why? Very political reason why. Because at the time, he, one, didn't have anything in his hand to substantiate it, and two, he did not want to delegitimize in any way Hillary Clinton's, at the time, nearly certain victory. And that is what you cannot forget in all of this. These people make me sick. Sick! Sick! All right, I'm done ranting. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. One other thing I just got distracted from and I needed to mention and bring full circle here is what has actually practically, when the rubber meets the road, how has Trump benefited Putin? Because in my view, if you're collaborating with someone, if somebody has the dirt on you and you're worried, you know, because that's part of the story here, right? Putin has got some compromising material on Trump. And so supposedly Trump is acting constantly in Putin's best interest because he's a puppet controlled by Moscow. So the Trump puppet, what is the Trump puppet doing for Putin? And the answer is, I don't think a whole lot of good. You have, number one, Trump, unlike Obama, is sending some really high-end military hardware to the Ukraine. So for the first time, we're giving full military support and equipment to the Ukraine. And you know, the Ukraine, there's some great territorial ambition there, as evidenced in Putin's takeover of the Crimean Peninsula during the Obama administration. There's support for the Ukraine. What else? Oh, well, I don't think exactly Trump took Putin's side in Syria, did he? Bombed the hell out of them, killed a bunch of Russian mercenaries. Oops. So he didn't act in Putin's interest there. Berated Angela Merkel for buying oil correctly. By the way, buying oil, natural gas from Moscow, saying correctly that this was a way that Moscow was going to get much needed hard currency, euros. The list goes on. He's added to military spending in NATO. Again, a North American treaty organization that North Atlantic treaty organization counters Russian expansion. There really isn't any. I don't know. If you're colluding with somebody, I would think that what you would do is you would in public be really tough on them, and then in actions be soft. I would think that you do exactly the opposite. I mean, again, Trump isn't a buffoon. So what's he doing? I'll explain it. What Trump is doing here, I think there's a difference between how he addresses leaders in private and how he addresses them in public. So you remember the whole story that got out about Theresa May, how he berated her in private. And then he had a press conference with her and was really kind and charming and everything and denied the story and blah, 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 blah. And the way the press spun that was, well, you know, it leaked out and people were outraged and he had to make nice. But this isn't what you do. It's not. He's a business guy. You don't do this in business. In private, you scold people. In private, you have your fisticuffs. But then in public, in front of the crowds, you know, even your opponents, you're gracious to them. It wins people over. It's not the worst tactic. You don't go somewhere and just say and crap all over them. And not in a public press conference. Newt Gingrich had a great analysis of this whole thing about Brennan and the whole crew. All these career diplomats, all these career politicians that were in office when all of this was happening. It's a great point making it on America's Newsroom this Thursday. Here's Newt Gingrich.
The Obama people who have been the harshest, Brennan, for example, who used the word, I think, traitor or treason, Jim Clapper, who was the director of national intelligence, Comey, who basically said nobody can be vote Republican and be a patriot in one of the, I think, nuttier tweets of the year. All of these guys failed. They were the people responsible in 16, not Donald J. Trump. He was a candidate. They were in charge of our national security. They failed, and they're now hysterical in trying to get us to look at Trump rather than look at them.
Bingo. This is exactly what you need to know. So when we come back here, we're up too up close to all of this. I want to remind all of you who we are and why. Because this is an important thing to reestablish and recheck in as friends here and fellow thinkers, patriots, and Americans. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Now, as I just told you before we took a brief recess, I think I want to take a little moment here and explain to you my perspective, which I suspect and for many of you is your perspective as well. And to explain a perspective, you have to get a little personal. And so I'm gonna endeavor to do that here, and I ask for forbearance in case this gets a little odd. When I was born, and I always hate when people talk about their lives, at 38, I really have not much to share, okay? I haven't lived a full life yet, at least I hope I have, and I don't think I have. But when I was born, my parents had only been in this country for 3 years. My mother worked as a postdoctoral teaching assistant at Northwestern University. We lived in Chicago, or actually Evanston, Illinois, and we were quite poor. I obviously don't remember my early years entirely well, but I do remember growing up later in Irvine, California, and living in a nice neighborhood that my parents sacrificed literally everything they had to be in. For many years, my parents were renters. We rented a home where everybody else owned. For many years, my parents drove a beat-up old car in a neighborhood where some had Ferraris and many had Mercedes and the like. And I grew up in a home that was absolutely fantastic. One small detail may not even be relevant here, but we didn't have a television. My parents thought it'd be better if I read and played, and so we never had a TV growing up. So I had an extra layer of detachment from popular culture, which set me apart from many of my peers. I mean, you go to school and people are talking about, back then, I don't know, whatever. What was the TV show? I guess, what's his face? Bill Cosby, right? The Cosby Show. That was a big thing. People come to school talking about the Cosby Show. Cosby Show what? Had no idea. I grew up in this environment with a lot of people who around me had an inside track made for them in life. Their parents were lawyers. Their parents were doctors. Their parents were, you know, third-generation Californians. First-generation Californians, but 10th-generation Americans. They knew the system. They knew how to work the system. When it came to colleges, their parents knew what to do and how to do it. Mine didn't. It's not no knock on my parents, but when I was growing, we were clueless. I was clueless. But in the end, I'll tell you, it all worked out for me because I had to figure out my own way largely in life. And I didn't have any pathway to follow. I didn't, you know, nobody was necessary. You know, well, my parents had ideas about what I ought to be. Certainly, I remember that as a teenager and pushing back on that. I think my dad wanted me to be a professor. Which clearly now in retrospect, I would have gotten canned from every university I would have ever have been lucky enough to get a gig at. This man here would never get tenure at any university worth its salt. So that didn't work out. But I know a lot of my friends went to Ivy League schools, and not just by virtue of connections, but they were excellent students, and I was not so much. And they went on and everything was so easy for them. In my view, this is outsider, you know, looking into that world. Because one Ivy League education then led to another. I mean, graduate school, master's program or the like. And all of these positions then led to these great jobs working for the government, working for big investment companies. And all of a sudden, you know, careers were moving and things were happening. And I was a college dropout by that point. Now I look at this now, and I'm so grateful for the path that my life took. But I also recognize in it a truth, and that is that as a country, we here really do believe in renegades. We love our renegades. We love our rule breakers. We love the people that buck the system and succeed. But we are a country that celebrates success. We're also a country that celebrates fair play. We have strong notions of this. I mentioned this last hour. And that means to say is that we unless you're a rabid, frothing at the mouth Bernie Sanders supporter, we actually do believe in success. We celebrate success, but we don't like you to cheat or to steal or to hurt people in the process. And we have laws and a system of laws that that protect or protect against that. And all of this means to say is that there success can be achieved a variety of ways. But in the end, we're okay with success. But what we do not like is we do not like a system of rigged success. And we are unusual, right? We're unusual as a country in this regard, because so many countries that you go to around the world, the powerful, right, become powerful and rich because they're in government. There are many Americans, including Trump, who become powerful in government by virtue of their success in the private sector, by virtue of their success before they enter politics. But what we don't like is we don't like people who abuse the system to become wealthy. And this is something we've always been built on. When you look at a movie, the old Jimmy Stewart movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, you remember he was the answer to the smoke-filled room where the candidate is selected and not elected, where he comes and he shakes up the political order. And that movie was so popular, and it struck such a tone, is that even back then, Americans were sick and tired of shady politicians doing shady things, enriching themselves, and subverting the will of the people. We are a republic, a nation built on the will of the people. And we don't care if you went through an Ivy League system, if you had everything handed to you, or if you were like me and kind of had stumbled your way into some modicum of success. It doesn't matter. In the end, if you followed the rules, if you did it right, if you worked hard, Godspeed. And congratulations on your success. But where we really chafe as a people, and this is not a Republican or a Democrat issue, but where it really bothers us is when people accumulate power by virtue of their political position and use that power to abuse us. Now, the left makes a big deal about this, mostly the left, but many of my friends on their libertarian leanings as well recognize that on some local level, on some local non-politicized, non-party level, that you've got local police. And if you listen to the Black Lives Matter people, you know, police are corrupt and they're racist and this and that, by virtue of what? Abusing their power and authority over the little people. Okay. Now, as a principle, it's true. In other words, to whom great power is given, there must also be checks and balances. If you give a policeman a badge and a gun, and the power to arrest, that's a lot of power. It's a lot of power that you and I don't have if we're not cops. And the same is true when you turn over an enormous spy agency like the NSA or the CIA and turn it into a political operation. We, the American people, have to be on some level incensed by that. I mean, most of my time growing up, you know, history books and having mostly left-wing teachers, I heard a lot about J. Edgar Hoover and what a jerk he was. Oh, this is what happens when, you know, the government takes over an agency that ought to be independent and doesn't become independent. Okay, we heard all about that. But what happened during the Obama years, what happened during the Bush years, is ultimately a lot of Americans, including me, realized that it was rigged. It didn't matter if the Republican was in or the Democrat. Didn't matter if it was a Christian or a, I don't know what, Obama was. Not a Christian. Didn't matter if it was a leftist or a compassionate conservative. None of that mattered. Because behind the scenes, it was the same people getting wealthier and wealthier, more powerful, more powerful. And you and I were losing our rights. You and I were quietly giving up our privacy. You and I were suffering in the system. And it doesn't matter if we're blue collar or white collar. It didn't matter if we were business owners or we were working for one of these terrible left-wing universities. We were all giving up quietly our rights and our power. And power that the Constitution properly invests in us as voters and as citizens. Now, I think that this is the context for the Trump revolution. It has nothing to do with his... It has nothing to do with politics as much as it does with culture. It was and continues to be a fight against a culture where the state is all powerful. We are not that type of people. Now, the Russians arguably, I don't want to get into a culturalist argument here, but you look at a country like Russia, from an absolute monarchy to a communist dictatorship. And then they get democracy. They don't even know what to do with it. I mean, Boris Yeltsin, wild years, everything gets stolen under the sun. And pretty soon Putin comes and cracks the whip and all the Russians fall in line. It's just in their blood. But we as Americans, we are the renegades. We're the people who don't want to be subjects. Citizens, we're okay with that, but not subjects. And as we've sat back and watched property values rise and rise in Washington, D.C. and its adjoining suburbs, and all the fine eateries in Georgetown pop up. I'm a foodie. I always know where the money is based on what's happening in the food and drink scene. So I promise you, producer Robbie's laughing. Yeah, I promise you, this is an indicator of how the elites in the shining city began to take over. And folks, make no mistake, Republican and Democrat alike. And I, as a political observer and, kind of curious person, as I began attending events and fundraisers and the like, I realized that a lot of these Republicans, I don't know about the Democrats, I didn't go to any of their events, but these Republicans, there's some really reprehensible people out there. For them, it was just a business. It's about money. It's scamming people. And this is why every election that took place, the Republican Party, the Democrat Party made promises that they didn't keep. But it was about money. It's about power. It's about getting reelected. It's about keeping cush positions. And ultimately, that was the kind of corruption that people had enough of. Republicans were betrayed by Bush, I suppose. And I just saw this George Soros piece where he claims that Obama was his greatest disappointment. I don't know. I thought George Soros fared pretty well under Obama. This gives you an idea just how crazy George Soros is. He felt that Obama was a disappointment. But I guess people on the left were disappointed by Obama. And at this point, for these reasons, people wanted a change. To trivialize this epoch as some sort of hack that happened where Trump called Putin. If the two of them got together in a room and said, "All right, Putin, I need your help." "Of course. What can I do for you?" "Well, I need to win this election." "Oh, you got it. I will hack the Democratic Party emails and I will find for you what you need." Okay, even if that exactly happened, we are a nation of 320 million people. How many people voted for? You don't achieve this kind of an upset victory by a political outsider simply because some emails were released. This was much bigger than this. It comes down to the idea of what America is. And that was what is at issue. And the media, by the way, the mainstream media, all the big political commentators, missed it all because they're part of that establishment. They're part of that political order. They benefit from it. They mingle with it. It's their social circles, their professional circles. They are all interdependent on each other. They are all part of the same cesspool of inbred anti-American, really anti-American, American being you and I, little people going to work every day, making a living and paying taxes. They are part of that cabal. The greatest con is Republican Democrat. And as I look at all these so-called conservatives who for years and years have written about wanting a more conservative court, about wanting to deregulate the country, about wanting a stronger military, just to name a few, and are getting everything they want from Trump, but they are not happy. And they're not happy because they are left out of it themselves. They don't have their power. And the truth is, the eternal truth here is, and it's laid bare for anyone to see who wants to take a minute and an ounce of brain power. The truth is that all these people care about is their power, their importance, but they don't care about getting at the truth, and they really don't actually care about their own supposedly deeply held political ideologies. It's fascinating. A little more on this when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
I'll tell you what my background proves to me. My background and my personal history proves that you really can make it in this country. You really can make it. That we can't lose sight of that. We can't lose sight of the optimism and that is America and the promise that you can be a self-made person. And I think that's part of what Trump represents, too. I mean, look, I understand. OK, but OK, Obama, self-made? Hardly. He lived on handouts. If the guy didn't have Annenberg money behind him, he would have, you know, would him and Bill Ayers just sitting there in Chicago handing out tens of millions of dollars of public funding. Teaching socialism to the inner city. That's not a real career. George Bush, well, I mean, it's, you know, there's some family money there. And H.W. Bush was, you know, what did we have there? Basically, again, a political opportunist in many respects. Long political career. Clinton? I mean, he lived off the state. He was broke every time he was out of government. The only thing he ever made money on was being in office and being able to sell his office in clever ways. Now, Trump represents something that is really tremendous in this country. Is that you can build something phenomenal. Yeah, so his dad gave him a big loan. Hey, George W. Bush got a lot of money from his dad. What did he do? He bought a baseball team. And then sold it. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying it's, you know, Trump built something great. And this is something that is possible for people. Not everybody's going to become a billionaire, but people can succeed. And if they put their mind to it, and the greatest obstacle to this is people saying you can't do it. And that was my biggest objection and dislike, really, for Obama and for Hillary in this era of Democrats who really want you to think that you need them to succeed. The only thing that you and I need from our politicians is to get the hell out of our way. We need less regulation. And Trump, you know, all this nonsense going on, Trump is taking a wrecking ball to federal regulations, a wrecking ball to it. Every administration, Republican or Democrat, the registry of new rules and regulations grows exponentially. And Trump slowed it down for the first time. This is epic. This is epic. And if you are a free market person, if you believe in the powers of the free market in capitalism, and you want to harness that power in your own life, you are going to be celebrating this guy. And who the heck cares how garish or vulgar he is? I don't. And as for patriotism, this is the last point I'm going to make here. The concept that Trump is bowing to Russia or any country and selling out America is laughable. Every person I know that knows the guy, and I've spoken to many, absolutely unequivocal his love of this country. And you can't, guys, you can't on one hand accuse him of being a nationalist and on the other hand tell him that we're selling our country out to Russia. Their arguments about Trump change with the wind. It depends on the latest ginned-up controversy that happens one day to the next. One week it's something, the next week it's something else. And you have to be smarter than that. In this era of absolute drivel coming out in the press, you have to be armed with the facts and trust yourself. Trust yourself that when your BS meter is going off, there's probably some BS flying around in the air. Yeah, I'm going to San Francisco next week. I'll let you know. I hope the BS is at least mostly grounded on the... Yeah, well, it's not BS. It's PS. All right, Friday Funny up next. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Brace yourselves, friends. I'm going to talk about the Kardashians. So gross. I know. But anyway, there was an interview. Okay, there's an interview on Fox News on Sunday that aired. Harvey Levin, or Levin, I think, however he pronounces it. He's the guy who founded TMZ. Super smart guy. He's a lawyer. And he certainly has built an empire peddling this type of garbage, rumors and celebrity gossip and the like. And he does a sit-down interview, very, very serious interview, with none other than Kris Jenner. Now, she's the matriarch of the Kardashian clan, mother of Kim, Khloe, etc. I don't know. I can't really. I know who Kim Kardashian is, but I don't think I could spot Khloe in a lineup. So, and there's some other ones. Isn't there a guy too? There's the Jenners, right? Because at some point, Kris Kardashian divorces from her husband, and he later passes away. Right? He's one of the OJ attorneys, and marries Bruce Jenner, formerly known as. Now. After her divorce, and I think many people sympathize with this. When you get divorced, I hear it's a tough thing. You go through, you know, you're going through a lot. And especially if you're just kind of sick of being in a relationship. I've heard this people say, I'm never dating another woman. I'm never dating another man. I'm done. I am done with human beings in my life. Just kidding. But, you know, that type of sentiment. So Kris Jenner is out with friends after her divorce. And she basically says that she's done with men. She's not going to be dating. And here's how she describes it to Harvey Levin.
2 weeks after I said I'm never going out with another guy again, I'm done with men, I met Bruce Jenner.
Well, she wasn't done with men, was she? And nobody has commented on this thing. Play one more time.
2 weeks after I said I'm never going out with another guy again, I'm done with men. I met Bruce Jenner.
I know he's laughing, but when you watch the interview, he's got a semi-straight face on. I mean, I would have lost my mind. Well, because, well, Bruce wasn't Bruce, or was Bruce, but I don't know how that works exactly, but here's the very next line. This is just priceless. Listen closely.
Do you think, looking back, the reality show in some way sunk the marriage?
No. No.
No. No. No. My husband wasn't a man. That's what sunk my marriage. Look, I don't know. It fascinates me to no end that this is newsworthy. That this sort of, this craziness is, but this is our culture, right? This is our culture. And if I could analogize it to anything going on in politics, it's so funny. Yeah, I listen to people who are trashing Trump one minute, saying how unqualified he is for office, and then they immediately turn around and tune into Keeping Up with the Kardashians and hang on every word of these episodes. Of course, we are a celebrity culture, and within the celebrity culture, people connect on a celebrity level. I think that they know celebrities and that they become one with them, and they're obsessed with them. So yes, in that context, you know, a reality TV show star can become president, especially if he's got some substance. Now, this is one more time, clip 7. One more time.
2 weeks after I said I'm never going out with another guy again, I'm done with men. I met Bruce Jenner.
Sam Rogowski back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, I think we've all heard, speaking of celebrities, that Sacha Baron Cohen is making a movie, and he's gotten a lot of people. In fact, it's funny, I mean, we got a bunch of political types. He's done a number. Who was it? Was it Joe Walsh? He's the abducted kid activist, right? Joe Walsh gets taken by Sacha Baron Cohen, and then the next day he speaks out against Trump for being a traitor and this and that. And I was just like thinking to myself, ha 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 ha, somebody's deflecting on a brewing embarrassment. Anyway, one person out there did not get taken by Sacha Baron Cohen, and that is Norris Sweden. Do you know who Norris Sweden is? You don't. Well, he is the owner of Warrior One's Guns and Ammo in Riverside, California. Have you been there? Robbie, you look like a guy that would live in a store like that. Anyway, Norris is speaking about an incident where someone came into his store to do an interview. He had been set up with producers. They were doing a show about supposedly a Hungarian immigrant trying to become a gun owner for the first time. And these are Sweden's words describing that exchange.
The moment his words came out of his mouth, I was like, this guy's full of shit. He comes in off the bat. You can see in the video, I'm looking, I'm like, this guy does not look like a Hungarian immigrant. Tight leather pants, a beard. It just didn't fit. I want to buy a gun. Like that, talking like that. And I just kept looking at the guy, and I was like, you're Borat. Soon as I said that, his eyes just looked at me like, and he did a B-turn right out the door. Once I knew it was Borat, we already know his game and his so we knew that he's here to make a mockery. And make a mockery of what? Gun owners? The gun business? Gun shops?
I want to make a really important observation here. And it triggered a memory for me. I was buying a rifle a couple years back. And producer Robbie, were you with me that time? when that sketchy guy, I don't know if you were there. But anyway, there's a guy that came in. I think that was a different visit. But anyway, there's a guy that came in when I was there at the store down in San Diego County. A guy came in to buy a gun. And they literally turned him away because he didn't have some ID, but also he was acting so suspiciously. And the owner of that store is a friend of a friend. And so I pulled her aside. And yeah, it's a woman actually owns that store. And I pulled her aside. And I said, hey, a question for you. Would you have sold him a gun even if the ID all like worked out? And she goes, no, absolutely not. Like there's something wrong there. And I bring this up because there was an article some time ago, and I have it here somewhere. It's back from 2016. Reporter tries buying assault rifle to show how easy it is, fails. A Chicago journalist attempted to buy an assault rifle to demonstrate how easy it was for terrorists to obtain dangerous weapons, only to be left grasping for an explanation when the gun store denied him. And it goes through the story. This happened after the Pulse nightclub shooting. This guy wanted to, you know, he's working for the Chicago Sun-Times, wants to show how easy it is to buy a gun. And they canceled the sale. They said, hey, it was just, we got the short hairs of our necks are going up, and we're not going to do it. Some of this debate and some of how we address the gun issue, it has to come down to, you got to understand, all of these politicians that want to set up gun policy, they all get taken by Borat, Sacha Baron Cohen. And it's the gun store owner that calls BS on him like that. Do you appreciate the irony? Is that something a little funny? Makes you think, doesn't it? Anyway. It gave me some hope here that, I don't know, it does come down to a gut instinct. And by the way, this is how we ought to operate the TSA and not these clowns that are patting down old ladies. We've got to go back by some instinct. You know, instinct goes a long way. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rzhovsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
No one, not one person this week failed to have an opinion about Donald Trump's controversial comments in Helsinki. Perhaps one of the most extraordinary opinions expressed came from this person, and not necessarily by virtue of what she said, but by based on who she is. Listen to Jane Fonda being interviewed by Australian radio show Jonesy and Amanda. And this happened, I think, on Wednesday. Listen closely.
Well, and that's extraordinary with what Donald Trump just said the other day. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, we know what he really thinks and who he really sides with, unfortunately. And now he's just trying to weasel out of it. But it's just, it's stupid.
Jane Fonda thinks that Trump is stupid. Well, that's funny in and of itself, but who the hell is Jane Fonda to criticize Trump's patriotic bona fides? This is a woman who literally, when you want to get to Brennan's definition of giving aid and comfort to the enemy, traveled as a celebrity, as the daughter of Peter Fonda, as a famous, famous American, traveled as a quasi-journalist to North Vietnam during the Vietnam War. I'm not talking about right or wrong or any opinions about the war itself. We're a free country. We have the First Amendment. You're free to speak your mind. But traveled to North Vietnam and was exploited. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. Was exploited as propaganda to fight the United States. Now, there was some rumor, unconfirmed, I've seen it both ways, that during a meet with some American POWs, Jane Fonda received notes from them to the government and to their families, which she then turned over to their captors. And this is a story that's gone both ways, so we're not exactly sure how that went. But if true, obviously, terrible. She earned the nickname for this Hanoi Jane, and it's plagued her for the rest of her career. She's a disgusting, horrible, gross human. But this is the left. This also is the debate that we're in, that somebody, like, if I was Jane Fonda and somebody wanted to bring up treason as a topic of conversation, I would stay so far away from that. I mean, this would be like Bill Clinton talking about sexual exploitation. I wouldn't even want to go there. Bill Clinton, would you give us an opinion about the Me Too movement? Man, run from that convo, lickety split. But you know what? That's funny, because Bill Clinton still has an opinion about the Me Too movement. And this is the problem. People like this do not have any sense of shame. They have no sense of self-examination. They live in a bubble where they have created their own reality. I know people like this. I'll tell you, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous thing. But the reality is, I think this has been a whole lot of nothing. What a crazy week. I hope you will have a great weekend. I know Friday is here. Enjoy time with your families, with friends. Be safe out there. Remember, tell a friend about the podcast. You go on iTunes, search for Sam Nation. It's there. Go to samnation.com. Email me, sam@samnation. What else? sam@samnation.com, obviously. And then, oh, Twitter. Yes, Twitter, Sam Nation, @SamNation. Instagram, @SamNation. You know where to find us, et cetera, et cetera. Great weekend, guys. Thank you for everything. And we'll be back next week before my trip to San Francisco. All right. Talk to you then. Keep on learning.